Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your one-stop shop for raising kids in this tech-heavy world. We bring on professionals and experts to give you all the tools you need to help your kids become fire-breathing warriors that have the strength to break out of the mold society has put them in. At the end of the day, we're all here for one reason: to help save some kids. I'm your host, Nate Webb. Let's get to it. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your host, Nate Webb, live in Studio Salt Lake City area, and we got a show for you today. We all know how important reading is. Kids who read are projected to be wildly more successful in life than those who don't. And it can be as hard, super hard as a parent, to try and push reading without making your kids hate it with a fiery passion. And so I brought a guest today that can help us with just that. With a remarkable background as a former teacher, school psychologist, professor, and special education director, Dr. Joe Lakovich. Did I say it right?
You did.
Oh my gosh. Look at me.
Dr.
Joe is a
right on. Couldn't be better.
True pioneer in the field of literacy education. He's not just an educator. He is the author and developer of groundbreaking programs like the Failure-Free Reading Program. Dr. Joe's passion for empowering students with chronic reading challenges has led him to train countless teachers, parents, and administrators nationwide. Welcome, Dr. Joe, to the Save the Kids podcast. Thank you for taking your time to be here, man.
Thank you. I am. I can't tell you how excited I am to be with you and with your audience. And I'm chomping at the bit, ready to go.
Let's do this. So you've had quite the career. I'm so curious, what got you so interested and passionate about children literacy, children and reading?
And adults and preteens and teens.
Right.
It was a situation that that I started as a resource teacher in special education, and when I went out into the community, I had found that I thought I had great training, but yet I significantly I inevitably always came across a cluster of kids that no matter what I did, as one teacher said, couldn't read a lick.
Oh, man.
And so that started me on a quest. And the quest is, all things being equal, why do we have these kids?
Right.
And I've only been at it 40 some odd years, but I'm getting real close, Nathan.
Speaking of that 40 some odd years, take me through your career a little bit. So did you start off as a teacher initially for your first career?
Yeah, I did. I was a resource room teacher for where I served kids that were emotionally disturbed, kids with specific learning disabilities. And then I received my doctorate. Well, my master's degree was from Southern Connecticut State University, and then my doctorate is from Boston University. And then I chose to spend some time in colleges at Sacred Heart, Belmont Abbey College in North Carolina, and then I was on the faculty at the University of South Carolina.
Wow.
And then my wife and I decided that it was time to do what I've always done in my middle 40s with three kids under the age of 10, to pursue the notion of being an entrepreneur. And so I started my own company, $750 in the bank, and in a belief that for whatever reason, this methodology was extremely exciting to demonstrate and had great impact. And that started me on this quest.
That's amazing. When as a resource teacher, how many years were you doing that as a resource teacher?
About close to a dozen.
Wow. 12 years as a resource teacher. And then what jobs were you doing as you were getting your master's, your doctorate, all your different, your certifications?
I was able to do a lot of that while I was still in the classroom. So I was able to do it after school, after hours, during the summer, never stopped.
And a true educator never stops educating, right? Even when we leave the classroom, even when we're no longer associated with a certain school, even when we start our own businesses,
that's
educators
exactly right.
To keep on educating. And I love your focus on reading because so my initial career, I'm a high school counselor by certification, profession. And the stark difference in those students who are literate versus those who are illiterate in their success, I'm not just talking like test scores. I'm talking like ability to communicate, ability to like negotiate. There's so many things that just being literate, like critical thinking, it's so huge. I've seen numerous studies where they look long-term at people who had, you know, wildly successful careers, and they've been following them since they were 8 years old or whatever, all the way until they were deep in their adult career. And the most common denominator wasn't a high ACT or SAT score or anything. It was reading at a young age.
Well, let me take that just a little bit. Let me refine that just a little
bit. Go for it.
My primary emphasis has been on, as I said, those students with pronounced reading difficulties. The kids that are testing anywhere from the 20th percentile and below on standardized reading tests. Mm-hmm. And these are the kids that have impact. For every 6 kids you have testing below the 20th percentile, you need 13 kids in testing in the 90th percentile to do nothing more than even out their impact.
Yeah.
So they're small and they're significant, but sadly they're starting to grow join the largest class in the United States in some situations, which is the underclass. Mm-hmm. So that being equal, what I found was that these kids carried with them what I called 3 characteristics that set them apart from their achieving peers. And I'd like to share that with you.
Let's go. Let's deep into it.
Let me also share with you and your audience my philosophy and what keeps me going.
Yeah, let's hear it.
That is, we're underestimating the ability level of chronically struggling students. 6, 16, 66, I don't care. We're underestimating mm-hmm. their ability. That the real enemy, and this is my gift to the parents and the teachers that listen to you, the real enemy is not the parent, it's not the teacher, it's not the administrator, it's not the student. Merry Christmas. It's my gift to y'all. The real enemy is the instructional approach. Change the approach and you will change the performance outcomes. It's as simple as that. And so, when you come to the teaching of reading, reading's most researched topic in all of education, literally thousands of articles written a year till we don't know how long. But if there is one universal, Nathan, it's that while all reading programs work, they don't work for all students.
That's the truth.
And so one of the issues that I have, and I'm always fighting, are the broad brushers. The ones that feel that they have the only the only approach. They put on their instructional blinders and
one size fits all.
Oh yeah, and it's happening right now in over 34-35 legislature states with a one size fits all.
I mean, it's been like that in Utah for a long time. Public education has been a cookie cutter approach for a long time. And like you said, those kids who might have some deficits, who might have some reading disabilities, who might just need a different approach are the ones being cast to the wayside.
In my book, The Failure-Free Methodology, New Hope for Non-Readers, which is first edition, I'm getting ready to do a second edition because I've made a major change in the naming of one of the 3 characteristics that I found with this population. I used to say that they were PD, ED, and LD. Now I say that they're ND, ED, and LD.
What does that mean?
I knew you were going to ask that. I could tell that already. ND stands for the term neurologically diverse.
Okay.
Neurologically diverse. Sometimes we have a tendency to forget about the concept of neurodiversity. And it's pretty straightforward. No two people are alike.
Right.
And the same holds true for learning styles. The brain has many, many different facets in which it processes information. And so to think that there's exclusively one approach that taps into the one way is just foolish. That's what I try to stress to parents and to educators. It falls into an argument it's dependent upon which field you fall into, whether you are an RD or a CS person. And I know you're going to ask, okay, Dr. Joe, you're getting me on the letters. What's RD versus CS?
Indeed, please.
Well, and that is when you're looking at interventions or you're looking at ways to help these kids. RD is where 99.9% of the current reading interventions, when parents are seeking help or when teachers are being asked to make a difference, usually they're being asked to use an RD intervention. And RD stands for remediation of the deficit. Remediation of the deficit. The assumption is that there's something wrong within the learner, and that makes them unique. And because of this, we're going to remediate that deficit. So the onus is on the learner. The assumption is it's within them. And they can't do it on their own. That's the RD philosophy. I am 100% adamantly opposed to that because I believe that there's a better option, which I know you're going to ask next.
Yeah. Well, I am curious. You know, what is that better option? But then B, I mean, right now I feel like kids, because of not maybe just because, but with the increase of use of screens and technology, you know, there a lot of reading I feel like is going down.
I think texting has a lot to do with it because it's very truncated, very short versions, and so they're not given an opportunity to fully experience the joy of reading by using advanced text.
Yeah,
so
like
you and I are on the same page with that.
Let me
move over to the CS, and the CS is what I believe is the better way, and I think you're going to agree with me too. Nathan, CS stands for capitalize on strength.
Amen.
Capitalize on strength. We know that while all individuals are born with weaknesses, what are they also born with, Nathan?
I mean, everyone's born with strengths.
That's correct. And so my philosophy is, it's pretty common sense, I believe. The main thing is, let's look at, number one, let's look at the primary reading approach being taught in the classroom. Then let's look at what is the neurological base of it. Is it visual? Is it auditory? And then if your child is not getting it, so to speak, then let's provide them with a viable alternative, because viable alternatives exist and the research is clear with it. I'll stop for a second, let you digest it and see if you have any questions that I can answer.
Absolutely. Well, obviously the cookie cutter way is not working. And obviously we need to capitalize on kids' strengths. At the same time, kids need to learn how to read. And so I don't know, what are some of those things, that the ways that we can capitalize on their strengths and still teach them how to read? Because at the end of the day, there is no replacement to reading. You need to be able to read.
And what you did led to my next part. And that is, it's important to understand that you used a term that I want to further expand on. And it's a term that everybody uses. But let me go this way. I'm gonna give you the Dr. Joe test.
Okay.
And don't panic. It's not hard, and I know you're gonna do great, Nate.
Let's do this.
Here we go. You ready?
Yes.
Reading comprehension.
What about it?
Reading comprehension. Here's your test.
Okay.
How many words did you just hear?
7.
Reading comprehension.
2.
Okay. And you passed the test, but it's a big but. Do you know when, if I were to bring the 12 leading reading researchers in a single room and ask them what they heard, do you know what they would have responded with, their answer?
I mean, maybe something like I did. I heard you say, like, how many words did you just hear? And I was counting, like, the sentence, how many words did you just hear? And
No trick. When we say reading comprehension, they hear 3.
Why?
They hear reading and comprehension.
Oh.
And so to them and to many, when reading is mentioned, many of them think that reading is purely getting the words right. My definition of reading is gaining meaning from the printed page.
Right.
Students who go through a process in which they learn how to recognize words, but yet when you put a passage in front of them and they get 95% plus of the words right, but then you ask them to read that passage aloud, and they don't pause at commas, they don't stop at periods, they read with a monotone expressionless voice, and then you ask them what they've read, they look you dead in the eye and say, "I don't know, beats me." Then yeah, all of a sudden, what we've got is a situation where they're not reading, even though they're recognizing all the words, because they're not gaining meaning from the printed page.
So how do we get them to comprehend, I guess? I think reading comprehension.
Yeah, I think what we have to realize is that, in my opinion, we're spending too much time treating symptom and in many cases, not enough time treating disease.
Ah, okay.
So the symptom is poor reading comprehension.
What's the disease?
You ready for the disease?
I think the world's ready for the disease, Dr. Joe.
More importantly, this is a gift. My gift to everyone in your audience. It's a one word. It's a one word answer that when you recognize it, you will be able to dramatically accelerate the comprehension and prepare every individual in our society to be more successful in life. How am I doing?
That's pretty darn good.
Well, here it is. Vocabulary. No student, Nathan, can read for meaning, and that's my definition, correct?
Right.
Can read from meaning above their vocabulary.
And I can attest to that. I can attest to that. I have a 5-year-old. And so, like, he loves to read and he can sound out a slew of words. But if it's a word that's not in his vocabulary, it means jack squat to him.
And that's because we'll spin off on that, but I'll give you 3 words that will dramatically help you on that too. Remember, input precedes output. Number one, the most important thing you want to do is get language in, get the vocabulary into the system. So with that 5-year-old, you want to become a vocabulary teacher first, a reading teacher second. You want to use reading as a vehicle to develop vocabulary.
Okay.
The higher their vocabulary, the greater their opportunity for success in school and in life. Does this help?
It does help. It does help. Keep going. You have a few, actually, reading comprehension facts that every parent needs to know. Lay it on us.
Okay. And let me also give you a little statistic that will just, that everyone should know. Researchers have found this, that lowest performing, oh, let me step back. I'm sorry. Students in third grade who are highest performing students, Nathan, have a vocabulary superior to lowest performing students in 12th grade.
Really? The highest performing third graders are higher than the lowest performing seniors.
Yeah, vocabulary.
Wow. Wow.
So as I said, that we can spend a whole lot of time teaching them how to recognize words, and I'm not saying that's bad and sounding them out, but we've got to look at ROI. What's our return on investment? What's the greatest thing we want to do? The greatest thing we want to do is enhance their comprehension and improve their confidence too. Because one of the things we have is that when we have a mismatch between the demand of the intervention and the strength that the student brings to the task, then we have a proportional frustration level.
Yes.
So what you see then are some really sad things. I'll give you a couple of examples if you don't mind.
Go for it.
When I was on the faculty, University of South Carolina, I was able to run a summer reading clinic or program for kids with pronounced difficulty. And two students stood up in my mind, but one in particular, and I talk about it all the time. He was 7 years old. He came to school in the summer program every day, right on time. And he always wore a baseball cap. Never took the cap off. Never, ever, ever took the cap off. And I thought, you intrigued me, little one. So let me find out a little bit about you. And what I found out was that he was a virtual non-reader. Mm. He had been retained in kindergarten. And I also found out that he was ending first grade. And if he didn't do well this time around, he'd be retained again. So this was his last shot, so to speak. So that said, let me ask you this question. Why do you think he wore the baseball cap? No right or wrong answer, just your opinion.
I mean, usually the first thought that comes to mind for me as a counselor is just so that other people couldn't see him if he was looking down at a book, couldn't see his tears.
That's an excellent answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good one. And a lot of times when I give this talk or I give this question, I've given it to maybe 10,000 teachers across in talks across the nation. Some will say, well, he loved baseball. It was something he felt good about. Kept the baseball cap on. Two wonderful answers. Would you not agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in this particular case, both were wrong. The answer really had to deal with a more common sense solution. And you know what it was?
He didn't like his hair.
He was wearing the cap to hide a fact. And you know what he was, the fact that he was hiding?
What?
And here's where it gets sad, Nathan.
Did he have cancer?
He was hiding the fact that his hair was falling out in clumps. He had a condition known as alopecia.
Mm-hmm.
Localized balding.
Yep.
What causes it?
I have no clue.
Stress.
Really?
Stress. This was a kid that wanted to do so well, so badly, that who was his victim?
Himself.
Yeah. Same in the same group, I had an 8-year-old girl with an ulcer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, same situation, pronounced reading difficulty, academic difficulty. So one of the things that I find a lot of times, especially when I was a teacher of self-contained kids, preteens and teens, preteens and teens, And I saw the relationship between poor academic performance and behavior. And a lot of these kids, what you find are the ones that have the greatest academic difficulty are the ones that act up in class. Mm-hmm. And they act up in class because they're smart kids and they know it's a hell of a lot easier to get thrown out of class and go one-on-one with the counselor or the AP, the assistant principal, than it is to make a fool out of yourself in front of your peers. I take a breath, sip my coffee, and thoughts, comments, anything?
Well, just, man, that's difficult for, I mean, everybody. But, you know, a lot of kids don't like reading, even though, you know, just the concept of it, because it's hard at first. Like, you know, my 5-year-old, sometimes when we're like, hey, it's time to do reading time, so there are some days where he acts like he hates reading. And so what can parents do to help their kids who say they hate reading?
Well, the first thing that that you do is you turn it into a pleasant experience. And so one of the things you have to do, because that's your child, you know what they like the best, you know that. The other thing that you have to realize, too, is that are you using something that is most beneficial and most comprehensible to your child? And when I say something, I mean the story. Mm-hmm. Researchers have found that there are what have been called, and this is Frieda Ebert's work, a lot of her work and other people that when I did my research, I found that there were what they call roadblocks, what I call roadblocks to reading comprehension. That as Frieda Ebert does say, text, T-E-X-T, does matter in the teaching of reading. In other words, all stories are, even though they might be on the same grade level, are not on the same comprehensibility level. In other words, some stories are going to be more meaningful to children, and other ones are going to be more confusing because of these roadblocks to comprehension. So let me share with you those roadblocks. And so as a parent, you can start looking for them. And when you're reading and you see that your child doesn't want to read, I think in many, many cases, you're going to see that they don't want to read because one of these roadblocks is surfacing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are the roadblocks? Well, uncommon names, dates, and places is one. There are names of people, terms of people, places that they can't relate to. And by the way, another 3-word, I gave you input precedes output, correct?
Right, right.
All right, I'm going to give you another 3. You ready?
Yes.
Reading is relating.
Yes, 100%.
Reading is relating.
Agree with that.
No student can read for meaning above their ability to relate to the content. The more they know about the content prior to reading it, then the more they can understand it as they read it. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
In fact, that was my second characteristic, kids, which was ED. And ED stands for environmentally denied. Mm-hmm. That you've got large numbers of kids right now who are having pronounced difficulty with comprehension that are coming with huge gaps in general background knowledge. And because of that, what a parent or what we see as extremely entertaining and exciting, they can't relate to it. And it could be subtle. It could be a name, a date, a phrase. It could also be the use of idiomatic expression or figurative speech. Terms that we don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
And then grammar is another one. That's a big one you have to look for in your, especially with your 5-year-old, that we know that how something is written is almost as important as what you're trying to convey. There are different grammatical styles that are easier to understand than others. Simple, positive, active, declarative is the basic unit of understanding. So let me give you an example. I don't want to turn you off, or I don't want to put people to sleep, but
go for it. No, this is great.
The man drove the car. The car was driven by the man. Now, in terms of the meaning that I'm trying to convey, is there any difference in the meaning of the man drove the car and the car was driven by the man?
No, but the focus is different. The focus in the one is different than the other.
Yes, and what you're basically saying is that while both are the same, which one is going to be read easier in terms of meaning? One will be read easier?
The first one, the man drove the car.
Man drove the car, because it's a simple positive active declarative and the object action orientation. The man is driving a car. And the second one is a passive sentence. You change the object action orientation. Now the car was driven by the man, and you're adding a prepositional phrase. So you're using more words in a more cumbersome way to say the exact same thing. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely.
So when you start sitting down and you're going in, you're buying the books for your five-year-old, and you're getting books that you think look incredibly easy and that they're going to love, and you just look at grammar, you'll see a lot of them have sentences that have abundant amount of quotation marks and commas. And then you'll see sentences in the story that begin with and, then, but, or. And you know what's wrong with that?
Tell me, Dr. Joe.
They're not sentences. They're phrases. So they are grammatically more complex. Does that make sense?
Yeah. We're making it harder on kids trying to learn how to read by saying, all right, this isn't technically a sentence, but it is, but it isn't.
Well, they can't relate to it.
Yeah.
And while we can relate to it, we don't know why they can't relate to it. And then the biggest one, the absolutely biggest one for a lot of our kids, especially chronically struggling kids, repetition. Mm-hmm. Repetition. When we now know that as the literacy level drops, Nathan, the need for repetition proportionately increases.
Yes.
And the problem that we have is traditional material is simply not repetitious enough for a lot of our kids. And yeah. You look at, is you a son or daughter?
I have three boys.
Okay. What are the ages?
3, 5, 3, 1.
Okay. Okay. So you are experimenting on age 5.
Yes.
And that is a boy, and that's wonderful. I have 5. Now they're all adults now, but they were girl, boy, and wonderful. And what I found was each one was different, absolutely different. But in this particular case, the stories generally that they like the most are the stories that they've heard the most predictable and can anticipate what's coming next.
Oh, 100%. I can attest to that. My kids, so there's these wonderful things called Wonder Books that are like read with me books where you push play and the person reads with them. And we got them because we didn't want to have our kids on tablets when we had our last child a year ago. We want our kids to be reading and do something other than being on screens all the time when we're busy trying to, you know, tackle this baby that's, you know, keeping us awake all the time and we're tired and we just
remember those days.
Right. And so we gave them these Wonder Books. And what's really cool is the books that they love the most are the ones that they have heard the most, where they can almost recite from memory what's happening in the book. They know what's going down. It's simple enough that they can understand, like, oh no, Clifford's in trouble. Like it's not a complex story. They're enjoying it, but also they're learning new words almost every time they read it. Because while it's a familiar story, there are some unfamiliar words that the more words that they recognize, the more words pop up that, oh, I didn't notice that word this time. Oh, I didn't notice. Oh, a poodle. That's a different type of dog. I just, you know, generalized that to dog last time I heard that. And so, yeah, definitely. I see that with even my 3-year-old. I see that a lot.
Well, I want to, especially the 3-year-old, I want to thank you. You just gave my talk, Nathan, and maybe the next time we can meet after that. No, we forget the importance of repetition. I like you. I've got we're getting ready for grandchild number 14.
Okay.
And they're under the age, all under the age of 15 years, and they all live within 5 miles of the house. So we don't know. One thing I can't relate to, in my more mature years is a phrase that people discuss, and I don't know what they're talking about. And it's called empty nester.
Emptiness.
We throw them out, they come back. on a regular basis, which we love. We're blessed with it. I'm only teasing, but
I know.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, and one of our one of my my granddaughter is she's 2.5, and we just did a little video of her sitting there reading the same story for the umpteenth time and just reading it aloud. Because is she memorizing? Absolutely. But is she excited? Absolutely. Is she enjoying it? Absolutely. Do we use it as a vehicle to instill reading? Absolutely. Does this help, Nathan?
Absolutely. it does. Because I know that if we can make it pleasurable to start, then it's going to be something that is going to be, for the most part, pleasurable moving forward. Now, for those parents who have teens who have learned to hate reading and they're trying to, you know, hit the brakes and throw it into reverse and try to get back on track, what are some simple actionable things that they can do within their home to make reading enjoyable, relatable, and get their kid to not hate it anymore?
Yeah. Okay. I would say, reserve some time. Make it commit to you don't need any more than a half hour. In fact, if you had to, 15 minutes. The research is showing that kids who read the best, 15 minutes will bring the lowest ones, the ones who read the least, back up into the normal range. So reserve 15 to 30 minutes. That is quality reading time. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, initially read with them. I don't care if they're 14, 15 years old. One, it's an opportunity to have an enjoyable experience with your child. Number two, find something that you think they're going to be intrigued at. Don't worry about readability levels. You don't have to deal with anything. So, you know their style, you know what they like. Try to find some books that tap into their interest. Number three, understand that now that you know the roadblocks to reading comprehension, which is uncommon vocabulary, uncommon names, dates, places, abundant use of idiomatic expression, awkward sentence structure in style, lack of repetition, then become an interpreter. Read that passage aloud with them. Talk about what you've just discussed. Read their eyes, because the eyes are the mirror of the mind.
Yes.
If they're attentive to it, then they're going to comprehend it.
Yep.
If on the other hand they're rolling their eyes, then you have to ask why.
Right.
And in most cases, it's usually because they don't understand it. They can't relate to it. There's something in there that's confusing. And you know yourself, your son doesn't understand it. But once you explain it, all of a sudden you see the light bulb come on.
Literally. Yeah.
So it's really cool. And what you're doing with 5 years old are no different than what you can do with those kids who are in their teens. And know too that another thing that they can do in terms of helping kids academically is see if the teachers will allow you to have the textbooks or the assignments go over the assignments before they go over it in the classroom. In other words, one of the things I always say is never use the text introduced. especially in content areas, science, social studies, math. Mm-hmm. You use the text to reinforce something that you've discussed or introduced. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense.
Is this helpful?
This is super helpful. This is really good stuff, especially for those parents that are just like, I want my kid to read. You know, every parent is terrified that their kid is just going to be this mindless couch potato on a screen if they let it happen. And then they're never going to want to read. And so having actionable things that we can do in the home to encourage pleasurable reading is really
helpful. Don't forget, you know, your kids are looking at you. I don't care how old you are.
Dun, dun, dun.
So yep. If you're not reading at home, they ain't reading at home. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's time to put the phone away.
The man in the mirror. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, put the phone down, parents. You want your kids to read? Maybe you
should
pop open a
book. Introduce yourself. Discuss what's going to go on. Share with them. Read a story that you fell in love with. With them, and you know, discuss it and tell them why you did it. But the main thing you have to do is that the problem, generally speaking, is not within your child. The problem is within the material or the way in which that material is being presented to them.
Yeah,
and the more you can elevate that vocabulary, the more you're going to be able to improve their comprehension. In fact, let me ask you this question. Would you say that it would be valuable if we could give a predictive test to everyone, and on the basis of the predictive test, the score that they get, we could determine almost with complete accuracy those who will be who are destined to be CEOs of a company, to those that are going to be middle management, to those that are going to be workers on the floor, to those people that are going to be less. Would you say that would be kind of exciting if we could do something as predictive as that?
Yeah, that'd be pretty valuable.
You ready? We've had that test since 1940. There was a researcher by the name of Thomas who did it. And you know what the test is called?
Is it the SAT?
A vocabulary test.
Oh, yep.
He created at that time, he used a pool of, I think it was 11,000 of the most important words, frequent words, and put it together. And the one, almost to a person, the ones who scored the highest were the CEOs, the executives, and the ones who scored the lowest were those that were not on the top of the food chain.
Right, man. You know, it really isn't rocket science. Like, even though, like, trying to, you know, get kids to be literate can be difficult, it isn't complicated. At its core, you know, like you're talking about, teach them words, get them to build their vocabulary.
Well, yeah, because we keep on saying we want to get them to be literate as if that's the standard. Literacy is just a vehicle for the higher standard, which is vocabulary. Look, you got to understand. Your audience has to understand, and I'll say it over and over and over and over and over again. We're a verbal society.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We are a verbal society. The moment you open up your mouth, you're being judged.
Oh, yes.
The more articulate you are, the better your chances of being successful. It's as simple as that. I talk about this over and over again, and I'll use it. It's a personal story, but my father-in-law, who's no longer with us, we lost him. Great guy, though. Just really terrific guy. And he was a tool and die maker. And he could make a die. And they would say, we want you to make a die, Frank. Mm-hmm. And he would create it. And then he'd put it on the machine, and that die would run millions and millions and millions of whatever it is without fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and to me, I had no idea. To me, it's totally beyond my comprehension, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, Frank, how can you do that? He said, it's easy. I said, what do you mean easy? He said, well, they tell me the specifics of what they want. And then he said, I'd go to bed at night and then I'd lie in my bed. And then what I would do is I would take this die with maybe 4 inches wide, maybe a half an inch thick, if that. And he said, then I would blow that die up in my mind to where it was 30 or 40 stories tall. And then he said, then I'd walk through the die to decide the different components and create it. I'm sitting here.
Okay.
Now here's where it gets really frustrating and sad. And yet on the same hand, he said, and you're so smart, Joe, I wish I were like you. And I'm thinking, I'm so what? And the reality is that Frank had a limited education. He was a go-getter, but he quit school before he got his high school degree. He got it afterwards. But he was judging my intelligence.
Based off your vocabulary.
On my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And yet when, as a former school psychologist, and I would was given hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of IQ tests.
Mm-hmm.
There are the IQ is broken into two parts. There's verbal, and then there's nonverbal. You know, mm-hmm. as you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But in this situation, Frank was a classic example. He was probably at best verbal wise. Below average. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean in a derogatory way.
No.
But Nathan, in a nonverbal area, he was a freaking genius.
Yeah.
I mean, he had an IQ of a genius. And yet, what was he judging himself on?
His vocabulary, his verbal intelligence.
You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, one, we have to let these kids know that the only reason why their vocabulary is low is because they haven't been exposed.
Yeah.
That gets back to exposing them to sophisticated language. When my first daughter, Tess, was, when we found out that she was, that we were going to have a child, and my wife was pregnant, every night before I went to bed, I would actually talk to Tess and my daughter, Tess, in the womb. And I'd say, hello, Tess, this is your dad speaking. The word for today is kinesiology. And then I'd say, and that means blah, blah, blah. Now, did I expect her to come out of the womb being able to talk kinesiology? No. But I wanted her to be familiar with advanced and sophisticated language, because I knew that she would be successful in life, and she is.
That's awesome. I love that. This has been such an enlightening conversation, and I hope it's been enlightening for the parents that have been listening as well, because you know this, the importance of reading is not to be slighted, but it doesn't need to be complicated. It can be easy and it can be fun. As we're wrapping up and finishing up, how can people see what you got going on, Dr. Joe? Shameless plug time. Let's hear it.
Okay. www.failurefreereadingonline.com. That's my website. There is actually, there's a vehicle in which, if you're an administrator, a decision maker, and you would like to schedule a time to consult, I'm ready. And then the second is, if you're a parent and you would like to try a failure-free reading approach, a methodology lesson, then you can, at no charge, you can try that as well. Go to the bottom of the page and you'll see that. We're underestimating the ability level of the kids. The enemy is not the teacher, the parent, or the student. Yep. It's the instructional approach. Change the approach, you will change the performance outcome. If your kid is not doing well in school, then you got to ask, what are they asking of them? And are there different ways in which I can I can share it because I know my kid has strength.
Yep.
Never give up.
Mm-hmm.
They can be faster. They can do higher. They can do more. The enemy is slower, lower, and less. And we want to replace it with faster, higher, and more.
Love it. Love it. And that will be in the podcast description below. So please go check out his website and check him out. He's doing wonderful things. And thank you, everybody, for listening to this week's episode of the Save the Kids podcast. If you want Save the Kids to come to your community, please fill out a speaker sheet in the podcast description below. Always remember, you're wonderful, you're worthy, and you're worth it. Go home and give your kids an 8-second hug, and we'll see you on the next one.